Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for May 3rd, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gager. Government and politics. Auditor Rob Sand calls for lowering degree requirements for some state jobs. By Robin Opsahl, April 30th, 2024. Auditor Rob Sand called for Iowa to remove four-year degree requirements from certain state jobs as a way to address workforce shortages. Sand released a report with Opportunity Ampersand Work, a nonprofit group focused on increasing skilled labor opportunities for people without traditional higher education. The report recommended removing four-year degree requirements or recommendations from 28 state positions, including information technology administrators and specialists, administrative assistants, and disability examiners. People with relevant two-year degrees, certifications, military service, or prior job experience could fill these roles, the report found. In a news conference Tuesday, Sand said the change could help fill open roles, in addition to giving Iowans job opportunities without the cost and time commitments of a bachelor's degree. Quote, "We think that once these jobs are opened up and more people feel welcome to apply, we're going to get a broader cross-section of Iowans applying for this work, including a lot of people who are value-focused, practicality-focused, who have made those career decisions for those reasons," Sand said. "And I think that's a good kind of mindset to have working for the taxpayers of the state of Iowa," end quote. Job listings and hiring processes are typically conducted through the Iowa Department of Administrative Services. Sand said he has sent the report to the department for further consideration. Governor Kim Reynolds directed the department to review the state's 807 job classifications within state government and to allow for, quote, "alternative requirements for employment whenever possible," Colin Crompton, spokesman for the governor's office, said. Quote, "Today, only 10.2% of state job classifications require a bachelor's degree," Crompton said in a statement. "We continue to look for opportunities to update job requirements, making state government employment as accessible as possible to Iowans," end quote. The governor has also pursued other avenues for expanding alternative career pathways in Iowa, he said, including the Registered Apprenticeship Program for teachers, paraeducators, healthcare careers, and other skilled trade positions. Other states have also moved to change degree requirements for state jobs. Maryland, under former Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican, waived four-year degree requirements from many state positions in 2022 in an effort to recruit workers following shortages left after the COVID-19 pandemic. Sand said the auditor's office revised its own hiring requirements in 2022 to accept people with associate degrees in accounting to fill needed positions. In the past 2 years, 10% of the office's hires has been people with two-year degrees, he said. But he expects to see more people with associate's degrees or alternative education filling these positions in the future. The auditor's office is working with Iowa community colleges on recruitment efforts, Sand said. Building out the, quote, "pipeline," end quote, for recruitment and wider opportunities with people outside of traditional university education systems is one way of addressing problems with workforce shortages in Iowa, he said. A February Iowa Business Council report concluded that with a 2.9 12-month unemployment average and 68.1% labor force participation rate, population growth and retention are pressing factors that needed to address the state's need for workers in both the private and public sectors. Quote, "It's hard for us to grow as a state or even to sustain our population if you don't have more working-age people in the state," Sand said. Ellipses. "So what we're doing today is talking about finding one, a particular way to make sure that we can match our workforce with the jobs that are available." Ag and environment. DNR adjusts water restrictions again to prevent river from going dry. By Jared Strong, April 30th, 2024. A rural northwest Iowa water utility will be required to shut down its wells near the Ocheyedan River when its flow is very low, according to a permit recently issued by state regulators. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources has determined that several wells operated by the Osceola County Rural Water System have contributed to the river running dry near May City. That has happened 5 times in 8 years. The DNR put more restrictive conditions on the operation of the wells last year that did not prevent the river from drying out again in September. New conditions that were finalized in April are similar but use different triggers. Specifically, when stream flow in the area is less than 1/2 cubic feet per second, the wells must be idled. Previously, the wells were required to be shut down separately as their levels dropped. Quote, "That 1/2 cubic feet per second seems pretty low," said Ed Jones, an Osceola County supervisor who lives near the sometimes dry sections of the river. Downstream from the area, near Spencer, the river has been flowing at hundreds of cubic feet per second, according to U.S. Geological Survey data. The DNR did not immediately respond to requests to comment for this article. The water utility has opposed the restrictions, claiming that other factors are responsible. Indeed, the DNR determined that Osceola County was partly responsible for a 2022 dry-up when it pumped water from a quarry near the river. That can reduce the amount of water in the ground and draw water from the river. But the county had not dewatered its quarry when another incident happened last year. The county has agreed to avoid pumping water from the quarry in July, August, and September, when the river is typically at its lowest. The latest permit conditions for the water utility, which serves about 8,000 people and also sells water to a Minnesota utility, require to photograph the river and document its pumping rates when one of the well levels drops to a certain elevation. Then, the wells must be idled when the river flow is too low at the Verdon Avenue Bridge, just northwest of May City. The special permit conditions are not effective if the river is dry upstream of the well fields, nor if the river is frozen. Osceola County Rural Water System did not immediately respond to requests to comment for this article. Healthcare. Nursing home administrator surrenders her license. Facility has been cited for 114 violations in 19 months. By Clark Kaufman, April 29, 2024. The former administrator of one of Iowa's most troubled nursing homes has agreed to surrender her license. In a rare disciplinary action, the Iowa Board of Nursing Home Administrators earlier this month charged Tara Berenson of Eagle Grove, who ran the Aspire of Gowrie care facility in Webster County in 2022, with violating the standards of her profession. At the same time the charges were publicly filed, the board agreed to accept Berenson's decision to resolve the case by voluntarily surrendering her license. The board action has no immediate practical effect as Berenson's license expired in December 2023. However, in order to have her license reinstated, Berenson will now have to show that such action would be in the public interest. The board's charges were based, in part, on an October 2022 state inspection at the 46-bed Aspire of Gowrie. That inspection resulted in citations for failing to provide residents with a safe environment, failure to prevent inappropriate sexual activity between residents, failure to ensure the staff was trained, spotting, and reporting dependent adult abuse, and failing to ensure all workers were subjected to a background check, failure to ensure the staff was skilled and competent, and failure to ensure a nurse was on duty at least 8 hours per day. 2 months later, the facility was cited for additional violations, including failure to correct the previously cited deficiencies and failure to provide the staff with personal protective equipment as they cared for residents diagnosed with COVID-19. Between January 2017 and March 2023, the Iowa Board of Nursing Home Administrators publicly sanctioned only three administrators, despite state inspectors citing care facilities for numerous violations tied directly to the administrator's actions. The violations were tied to physical abuse, unwarranted evictions, falsification of records, and patient dumping. Facility cited for death, fined $197,230. Since Berenson's departure from Aspire of Gowrie in January 2023, the home has continued to be cited for violations. Currently, is one of two Iowa nursing homes on the federal government's list of, quote, special focused facilities, end quote, which are some of the worst care facilities in the nation. Aspire of Gowrie has been on the list for 7 months. The most recent incident at the Gowrie home involves a resident who choked to death on his dinner in early January. The staff at the home was aware the man was at risk of choking and had given him the Heimlich maneuver on three occasions. In addition to being cited for the resident's death, Aspire of Gowrie was cited for numerous other violations, including a, quote, strong, offensive urine odor, end quote, in one area of the building. A maintenance worker told inspectors he was aware of the smell, but, quote, the facility did not have the budget to buy the cleansers to get the smell out, end quote. The home was also cited for a failure to ensure all residents were seen by a physician once every 60 days. Failure to ensure residents were given at least 2 showers per week. Failure to respond appropriately to residents injured in falls, failure to respond appropriately to residents' weight loss, and failure to offer or provide residents with their full meals and their nighttime snacks. Since October 2022, Aspire of Gowrie has been cited for 114 quality of care violations and been the focus of 26 complaints. Federal records indicate that in the past 3 years, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has fined Aspire of Gowrie a total of $197,230. On several occasions in the past 2 years, Aspire of Gowrie has been cited for the same serious Class 1 violation, failing to provide a safe environment for residents. The safety violations were tied to a failure to protect residents from sexual abuse, squirting glue rather than eye drops into a resident's eye, inoperable door alarms, and the January 5th choking death. Last year, Aspire of Gowrie had CMS's lowest possible rating for overall quality, healthcare inspections, and staffing levels. Currently, the home has no CMS ratings at all due to its status as a special focus facility. Federal records indicate the home is a for-profit venture owned by Black Hawk Healthcare, a limited liability corporation, and that Bruce Wertheim of Beacon Health Management in Tampa, Florida, owns 100% of the company and exerts managerial and operational control of the home. Court records indicate that in 2021, Beacon purchased the 10-facility Pearl Valley chain of Iowa nursing homes for $24.2 million. The entity that brokered the deal said the homes were generating $35 million in annual revenue, with cash profits totaling $3.5 million per year. At the time, a state nursing home regulator named Todd Frank was recruited by Beacon to head the company's Iowa operations. Court records indicate Frank then left his $89,000 per year job as deputy administrator of the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals Health Facilities Division to join Beacon at an annual salary of $150,000. Healthcare. Justice. Quote, essential worker, end quote, claiming vaccine side effects now seeks workers' comp. By Clark Kaufman, April 30th, 2024. A Cedar Rapids city employee is seeking workers' compensation benefits for injuries he attributes to the city's repeated promotion of the COVID-19 vaccine. State and court records indicate that in April 2021, the city of Cedar Rapids began hosting vaccine clinics and sending out emails and newsletters encouraging, but not requiring, city employees to get the vaccine. One such newsletter stated, quote, it takes everyone. We all need to step up to beat COVID-19. We ask you to join us in protecting your community by getting vaccinated. A subsequent email stated, quote, the city of Cedar Rapids encourages you to get vaccinated, in all caps. Larry Driscoll, then a 51-year-old manager for the city's Public Works Department, decided to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine against COVID-19. Quote, I felt that it was the proper thing to do since we're all essential workers, Driscoll said later in a deposition. I just felt that it was a good option for me to lead the department to ensure that my guys didn't get sick from me. After suffering from side effects allegedly caused by the vaccine, including fatigue, facial drooping, loss of balance, and weakness or numbness throughout his body, Driscoll filed a workers' compensation claim, arguing his issue stemmed from his work for the city. The city didn't dispute Driscoll's injuries or his account of its efforts to get city workers vaccinated, but it did argue that the vaccine and Driscoll's resulting health issues didn't arise from his employment with the city. In January, Workers' Compensation Commissioner Joseph Cortese II reviewed the matter and ruled that while the city had clearly encouraged workers to get vaccinated, it did not require workers to do so, and he denied Driscoll's application for benefits. Cortese noted that the city offered workers no financial incentives for getting vaccinated and did not penalize those who opted to refrain from getting vaccinated. Instead, Cortese found, the city pursued a policy that was generally in the best interest of the workers and the community. Quote, if an employer strongly urged its employees to eat healthy and consume green vegetables, it would be strange to conclude that an employee who choked on some broccoli at home would have sustained an injury that arose out of his employment, Cortese stated in his ruling. Driscoll is now appealing that decision by taking the case to Polk County District Court, where he's seeking judicial review of the matter. In court filings, Driscoll's attorneys note that their client scheduled his vaccination appointment using a work computer during work hours through a city-provided link. In addition, they say, city employees were told they could use up to 2 hours of pay under the city's, quote, healthy workplace leave policy, end quote, to get the vaccine during work hours. They also argue the case should be treated in the same manner as a college professor who died of a heart attack during an intramural softball game. In that case, benefits were awarded on the basis of the game being staged to further the school's goal of improved relations between faculty and students. Driscoll's situation, his lawyers have told the court, quote, is analogous to recreational or social activities where injuries are compensable when an employee engages in an activity that provides a substantial benefit to the employer beyond the intangible value of improvement in employee health and morale. Oral arguments in the case are scheduled for May 17th. School districts penalized for late payments. Among the other recent workers' compensation cases in Iowa are two in which school districts have been penalized for delayed workers' comp payments to employees. In the first case, Graciela de Maldonado sought a penalty against the Waterloo Community School District and United Wisconsin Insurance Company, arguing they had unreasonably delayed paying out her weekly workers' compensation benefits for a 2017 workplace injury. In 2019, the district and the insurer were ordered to pay 325 weeks of permanent partial disability benefits, backdated to December 2018 and continuing through February 2025. Aaron Powles, Deputy Workers' Compensation Commissioner for the state, recently reviewed the matter and concluded that on several occasions, the district delayed the payment of weekly benefits that totaled $5,785, with the delays ranging from 1 to 4 weeks. In her decision, Powles wrote that the district and its insurer, quote, offered varying theories on what may have happened to cause the delays, end quote, blaming De Maldonado's attorney or the U.S. Postal Service without offering any evidence to support those claims. Powles wrote that it appeared the district and its insurer, quote, do not know or will not say why the payments were stopped. Powles imposed a penalty of $2,892, an amount equal to half the total of all delayed payments, which is typically considered the maximum level penalty in such cases. She also imposed a sanction against the district and the insurer for failure to adequately respond to information requests in the case, awarding De Maldonado an additional $900 for attorney's fees. In the second case, the Johnston Community School District, which is self-insured, appealed a September 2023 arbitration decision in a case involving district employee Nijah Ikeljic. Ikeljic had been awarded 250 weeks of workers' compensation benefits related to a partial disability caused by workplace injuries to his neck and left arm. As part of the arbitration decision, the school district was also ordered to pay a $500 penalty for unreasonable delays in pain benefits and pay for Ikeljic's expenses in arbitration. Workers' Compensation Commissioner Joseph Cortez II recently upheld the arbitration decision in its entirety, awarded Ikeljic 250 weeks of benefits at $519 per week, plus the $500 penalty and arbitration expenses. State records indicate Ikeljic continues to work for the district and is now employed in a position that pays higher wages than the job he held at the time of his injury. Education. Drake University launches Teacher Intern Program for Professional Students. By Brooklyn Drazy, April 28, 2024. Drake University will offer people with a passion for teaching, who took a different path, a way to earn their teaching credentials and master's degree while gaining in-classroom experience. The new Teacher Intern Program, developed over the past year and approved by the Iowa State Board of Education in March, will put students with a bachelor's degree in any field and at least 3 years of professional experience into a two-year program, the first focused on taking courses and the second on training in a real classroom setting. Drake School of Education Dean Ryan Wise said the program was created to give people who may wish to become a teacher but who are already locked into a different job or who have found barriers to entering a more traditional teaching education. It will launch in the fall, he said, and people have already started showing interest. Quote, this program removes those barriers and gives them an opportunity to come back and in 1 year take the coursework they need, and then in the second year actually become a fully paid and licensed teacher in a school, Wise said. Courses will focus on the foundations of teaching, Wise said, like planning and assessment, technology integration, and method courses in their chosen subject area. The 9 classes will be spread out across the fall, spring, and summer semesters. Once they have completed the required credits, the students will have obtained their intern teaching license in order to be hired at a partner school district, typically to work in a middle or high school. This will allow them to receive full pay and benefits, Y said, which sets the program apart from the unpaid student teaching required in traditional teaching education. Des Moines Public Schools will serve as the flagship partner for the intern program, Y said, but the goal is to expand to more districts across central Iowa in the coming year. Quote, Drake's new teacher intern program is not only one more step in the long relationship between our two institutions, but also a deepening of our mutual commitment to serving the educational needs of our city and state, said Superintendent Ian Roberts in a news release. DMPS is dedicated to encouraging and supporting the next generation of educators. Thanks to this new opportunity through Drake University, it will help open the door to the classroom for a new generation of teachers. Over the course of their teaching as an intern, the students will earn 10 more credits without needing to take more classes. Completing the program in totality will earn them a Master of Arts in Teaching degree. While Drake's new program isn't the first in the state to offer a teaching intern license, Y said, it is the only one based in Des Moines and the only one to award a master's degree on top of licensure. According to the Iowa Department of Education, the University of Iowa and Morningside University also house teaching intern programs. A Master of Arts in Teaching program already exists at Drake, Y said, but the new interning opportunity will allow the university to expand its offering to students with different needs. It also gives students the chance to earn more earlier. Quote, oftentimes in schools, you'll move up on the salary scale once you earn a master's degree. So not only will our teacher interns get paid in their second year, by their third year, they will very likely have a chance for another salary increase in career, Y said. So we think that master's degree is a real enhancement on top of the licensure. More information on the teacher intern program can be found on Drake University's School of Education website. Education. Drake University to eliminate three academic programs to aid in balancing budget. By Brooklyn Dracy, April 29, 2024. Drake University will eliminate three programs as part of its efforts to make up budget deficits, the university announced Monday. University President Marty Martin said in a message to campus that the religion major, East Asian Studies minor, and evidence-based healthcare graduate certificate will be discontinued. The 14 students in the programs will be given a teach-out plan in order to earn their credentials on time. During a time when colleges and universities are struggling with declining enrollment from lower numbers of students deciding to go to college and after effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, Martin said Drake is working to position itself to expand and thrive while remaining true to its mission. Quote, as the higher education landscape evolves, we too must evolve, Martin said in his message. This is not the first time Drake has navigated through a period of change. Each time, we've emerged stronger and more prepared to live up to our commitment to transforming lives and strengthening communities for generations to come, end quote. The private university is trying to have its budget balanced by July 2025, Martin said, but he has told the Faculty Senate the deadline for cuts is June 30, 2026. He said the academic review and identification of programs to be eliminated is one part of that. According to a draft of meeting minutes for a November Faculty Senate meeting, Provost Sue Mattinson told members all units of the university have made cuts in order to lower costs that, alongside putting resources into new programs to drive recruitment, still weren't enough to fill budget gaps. The university would need to cut around $14.3 million of its $132 million operating budget in order to get where is needed, according to minutes from a January 31st Faculty Senate meeting. After Mattinson told Faculty Senate members in the fall that the university would conduct an academic review, she announced to the university in March that 13 majors, minors, and certificates were recommended for discontinuation. In his message, Martin said, quote, since November 2023, we have worked collaboratively, faculty, governance, administration, deans, and the Drake Board of Trustees, to review our academic offerings and identify areas where we can strengthen programs and better align the academic portfolio with student demand and workforce needs while staying true to our mission, end quote. Once the recommendations were made, faculty had the chance to provide evidence that their programs were worth keeping. The Faculty Senate voted against recommendations to do away with programs including the rhetoric major and minor, physics and astronomy majors, and masters of accountancy and public administration at its April 17th meeting. The three remaining programs up for elimination that passed through the Faculty Senate went to the Board of Trustees, which approved the recommendations last week. Combined, eliminating the programs could save the university a minimum of almost $130,000, according to a document detailing the programs recommended for discontinuance and the rationale behind them. One faculty line will be eliminated from the religion major, according to the rationale, and the faculty member who held that position will be moved to the law, politics, and society. Education, capital clicks. Luther College president announces plans to retire in 2025. By Brooklyn Drazy, April 29, 2024. Luther College president Jennifer Ward will retire next year after more than 40 years in academia, the college announced Monday. Ward, who has served as president of the Decorah University since 2019, will remain in the role until the end of June next year, according to a news release. Ward said in the release she looks forward to working with the community over the next year at the university that, quote, enriched, challenged, and transformed, end quote, her. Quote, my love for Luther is deep and genuine, and I so appreciate the challenging and collaborative work this campus community has undertaken together over the past several years to address the rapid changes in higher education and move Luther College forward as a place of faith and learning for current and future generations of students, Ward said in a message to campus. The college's Board of Regents will begin identifying next steps for the search to find a new president, Board Chair Bob Paulson said in the release. The board will update the campus community after its May meeting. Quote, on behalf of the Board of Regents, I want to express our gratitude to President Ward for her exemplary service for putting the best interests of Luther College front and center through careful succession planning, Paulson said in the release. Ward will leave Luther College at the end of its 2023-2025 strategic plan, and she said in the release she shares the board's goal of reaching the university's strategic goals, like finishing the initial phases of the campus master plan. According to the release, during her tenure, Ward focused on making student success more holistic through a new student services department under the purview of the provost reorganizing curriculum. Quote, I look forward to continuing to engage with the broader Luther community over the next year as we advance this great college, Ward said in the release. Luther's fabric is strong, and I know my successor will be equally blessed by how our people care for the, quote, Luther blue, end quote, thread that pulls through it. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for May 3rd, 2024 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. Government and politics. Governor Kim Reynolds signs law lowering individual income tax rate to 3.8% in 2025. By Robin Opsel, May 1st, 2024. Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law a measure speeding up income tax cuts, lowering Iowa's individual income tax to a 3.8% single tax rate beginning in 2025. Reynolds signed Senate File 2442 into law Wednesday, a measure speeding up the cut made in 2022 to decrease Iowa's individual income tax rate to a 3.9% single rate by 2026. The governor praised Iowa Republican leadership for working with her on tax measures that, quote, comprehensively transform our tax code and dramatically increase our competitiveness within a few short years, end quote. Quote, when I took office, Iowa's personal income tax rate was the sixth highest in the nation at 8.98%, Reynolds said. I think we had nine brackets, and the list could go on and on. It was certainly clear that we needed to make a change, and that's exactly what we've done, end quote. When this year's tax cuts are implemented, Iowa will have the sixth lowest income tax rate among the 41 states with an income tax, according to the Tax Foundation. Quote, at the same time, conservative budgeting practices have kept us living within our means and allowed us to continue making historic investments in key priorities of Iowans, Reynolds said. Even after these tax cuts, we closed fiscal year 23 with $1.83 billion surplus, nearly $900 million in cash reserves, and $3.7 billion in the taxpayer trust fund. So it's clear that we're positioned to go further, faster. Lowering income taxes was one of the main priorities for both the governor and Republican legislative leaders this year. Earlier in the session, more dramatic reductions were proposed. Reynolds introduced legislation to reduce the individual income tax rate to a flat 3.65% in 2024, retroactively, in addition to another cut to 3.5% in 2025. The chairs of both chambers' Ways and Means Committees, Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican Wilton, and Senator Dan Dawson, Republican Council Bluffs, introduced a bill to lower the tax to 3.775% in 2026 and 3.65% in 2027, as well as set up a system using money in the Taxpayer Relief Fund to finance future cuts until the state income tax was fully eliminated. Some Democratic lawmakers, including Senate Minority Leader Pam Yoakum, criticized the move to a flat income tax rate as unfairly benefiting wealthier Iowans over lower and middle-class Iowans. She also said the tax cuts being made may not be sustainable if the state faces economic downturns in the future and could put key funding priorities, like Iowa's K-12 education system and other social services, at risk in the future. Quote, "Sooner or later, it's not going to work. It's not good budgeting. It isn't sustainable," Yoakum said in April. "I was trying to look at the long-term impact of all the different things that have been happening the last few years in terms of educating our children. Combined now with all the changes going on in the tax system, that would reduce revenues very quickly." And these larger proposals were not implemented this year, but both Reynolds and Republican lawmakers have indicated they plan to pursue further income tax cuts in the future. House Speaker Pat Grassley told reporters following the adjournment of session that this year's legislation ensures that tax cuts are done, quote, responsibly and sustainably. The new law will be financed using excess tax revenue from this year's budget plan, Republican lawmakers said, as well as through a withdrawal from the Taxpayer Relief Fund. If state revenues fall below state appropriations for a fiscal year, the measure also stipulates that the relief fund will be used to make up for a part of needed funding until July 1, 2029. The Legislative Services Agency analysis of the proposal stated that revenues are not expected to fall below state spending in this time frame. At the bill signing, Reynolds praised the tax cuts lawmakers have been able to implement since she took office, saying that from 2018 to fiscal year 2030, lawmakers will have saved Iowa taxpayers nearly $24 billion. Lawmakers also passed two other proposals related to income tax this legislative session. The first steps of putting two proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot for Iowans in future elections, Senate Joint Resolution 2004, enshrining a flat tax rate, and House Joint Resolution 2006, requiring that increases to Iowa's income tax reach two-thirds majority support in both chambers to pass, were both approved this session. Both constitutional amendments must be passed by the next General Assembly before they appear on a general election ballot for voters to directly weigh in on. If the measures get a simple majority support on the ballot, the language will be added to the state constitution. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics. Grain Fund Bill had support but ran out of time. By Jared Strong, May 1, 2024. There is consensus among state lawmakers to update a fund that protects farmers when corn and soybean buyers go bankrupt. But a bill related to that goal failed this year because others took priority, according to a lawmaker who managed it. Quote, "We ran a little bit short of time," said Representative Dave Dayo, Republican, Nevada, who managed a bill in the Iowa House. Senate File 2401 gained unanimous approval in the Senate in early April, less than 3 weeks before the legislative session adjourned. The bill would have roughly doubled the typical operating balance of the state's grain indemnity fund, with a minimum of $8 million and a maximum of $16 million. The current minimum and maximum is $3 and $8 million. When the balance falls below the minimum, the state collects a quarter cent per bushel fee on initial grain sales until the fund reaches the maximum. The fund covers 90% of farmers' losses, up to $300,000 per sale, when they aren't paid by grain buyers, often when the buyers go bankrupt. It gained the attention of lawmakers last year when a string of bankruptcies threatened to deplete its reserves, which led to a reinstatement of the per bushel fee for the first time in more than 30 years. There was disagreement last year among lawmakers about whether to alter the fee collection. Some supported a measure to siphon money from a long-standing assessment on corn sales that is used to promote the industry, but that bill was broadly opposed by agriculture groups. Dayo said the dispute delayed the discussion of a new bill. Quote, "There was some reluctance early on to take it up this year because of what had happened last year. And then we were kind of surprised at the last minute when they basically ran the bill through the Senate and sent it over to us," end quote. The bill also had a provision to extend the fund's coverage to credit sale contracts, when farmers sell their grain but aren't paid for it soon after. Those transactions are generally viewed as riskier for farmers, and some House lawmakers were concerned about extending coverage to them, Deo said. The Iowa Farm Bureau Federation supported the provision, quote, "Every other state that has a grain indemnity fund provides some form of protection for credit sale contracts," Matt Groenwald, state policy advisor for the group, said in February. The Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, which helps manage the fund, supported the overall bill. Quote, "We anticipate there will be ongoing discussions with industry stakeholders and legislators leading up to next session about what, if any, changes should be addressed," said Don McDowell, a spokesperson for the department. The legislative delay is not expected to affect the fund's coverage for farmers. The fund began to replenish last year, and it had a balance of about $3.5 million in mid-April, said James Kennedy, chief of IDOL's Grain Warehouse Bureau. Civil rights and immigration, government and politics, justice. Immigrants, advocates, rally against lawmaking, illegal immigration, a state crime. By Robin Opstel, May 1st, 2024. Immigrant advocacy groups held five events in cities across the state Wednesday to oppose a new law that makes illegal immigration a state crime in Iowa. In Des Moines, more than 70 people gathered under umbrellas and canopies on the terrace of the Iowa State Capitol, holding signs and listening to speakers with Latinx immigrants of Iowa discuss the impacts of a new state law. Governor Kim Reynolds signed Senate File 2340 into law in April. The bill allows state law enforcement to charge people with an aggravated misdemeanor if they have been deported, denied admission, or removed from the U.S., or if they have a standing order to leave the country, with higher penalties for people who are illegally in the state with prior criminal convictions. The legislation would also allow state judges to order the deportation of undocumented immigrants. Law enforcement and state agencies would be able to transport migrants to U.S. ports of entry to ensure they leave the country or else face felony charges. The law is set to be implemented July 1st. Attendees at the Des Moines rally chanted, quote, "No tengan miedo," end quote, meaning, "Don't be afraid." Others held signs saying, "Por la dignidad humana," end quote, or "For human dignity," as well as signs like, quote, "Iowa is not Texas," end quote. The Iowa law is modeled after 2023 Texas law that similarly made immigration a state crime in an effort to extend enforcement of immigration laws beyond federal enforcement. The Texas law is being challenged in federal appeals court by the U.S. Department of Justice and civil rights organizations on constitutional laws. Allison DeLuna, a high school senior holding a sign with, quote, "I should be worried about college, not SF 2340, end quote, written on it, said that since the law's first introduction, she and her loved ones have been scared about the potential impacts on her community. Many Latino Iowans, even those who are not undocumented immigrants, are worried the law could lead to discrimination by law enforcement and the larger communities they live in, she said. Quote, "Everything I'm hearing about with my friends at home is," so quote, "Oh, is there any updates on the law? Have you heard anything? What does it mean for my family?" End subquote, she said. "Even I can be in danger. Me driving, and they can just stop and ask questions. It's terrifying. And it makes me just worried about what's going to happen in the state. It's just really unfair." Jessica Rodriguez, a Des Moines mother who attended the event with her children, said she was worried about the bill's impact on families, potentially splitting up family members on the basis of immigration status. She also said she hopes to see court action against the law in Iowa, or for the measure to be stopped from taking effect. Quote, "I would say, any way for everything to go back to normal," Rodriguez said, "because you see, there is no better city to raise our kids, and we're working to do that with the same people, with American people. We're working hard to raise our kids. It's just a matter of the color of the skin, nothing else." Eshuda Mivaz, another immigrants advocacy organization, organizing events Wednesday, released a statement saying the organization is looking into potential court challenges to the law. Quote, "We are also exploring legal action in the courts and have requested meetings with the U.S. Department of Justice, Iowa Department of Public Safety, and local police chiefs and county sheriffs," Dinaska Campos, a member of Eshuda Mivaz, said in a news release. Speaking with reporters earlier Wednesday, Reynolds said making illegal immigration a state crime is the, quote, "humanitarian thing to do," end quote. Quote, "When you look at what's taking place at the southern border, it is a national security issue as well as a humanitarian crisis," Reynolds said. "These people are being, these women and these children, are being raped. They are being brutalized. They are being trafficked. They are dying, trying to cross a river. So we have a process in place. That's legal immigration. Take a look at that. Streamline it. Reduce the cost. Or, if they're seeking asylum, there's a process for that. But that's not what this administration is doing. And I believe is the humanitarian thing to do to make sure that we're not putting these individuals at risk by subjecting them to a cartel that is trafficking them, taking advantage of them, and make no mistake, they are running the board right now. She called for the Biden administration to increase border security and enforcement measures, in addition to saying Congress needs to take action on changes to the U.S. immigration system. President Joe Biden and his administration put together a bipartisan immigration reform package earlier in 2024 that was rejected by U.S. House Republicans. In the absence of action from Biden, Reynolds said, quote, "Governors across the country have an obligation to step in and do what we can to protect our citizens," end quote. "I want to send a message that we welcome legal immigration," Reynolds said. "We are a gracious country when it comes to that. But you know, again, if we are a country without a border and a country without laws, we might as well be a third world country. We are not a country. And it has to stop. It is a national security crisis." Government and politics. Uplift to continue despite new law banning local government funding. By Robin Opsahl, May 2nd, 2024. Although Iowa has a new law preventing local governments from funding guaranteed income programs, the Uplift program in Iowa plans to continue through outside support. Governor Kim Reynolds signed House File 2319 into law Wednesday. The measure prevents cities and counties from implementing programs that support supplemental incomes to residents with no work requirements or restrictions on how the funds are spent. The new law gives the State Attorney General's office the ability to send cease and desist letters to local governments that attempt to violate the ban. The new law will largely affect funding for the Uplift pilot program, currently underway in central Iowa. The 24-month study provides 110 people, individuals in Polk, Dallas, and Warren counties, with household incomes at or below 60% of the area median income and with at least one dependent in their household, with $500 per month. The program, led by the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement, was launched as a research project evaluating the impact of guaranteed income on participants' health, quality of life, and financial security. The Center for Guaranteed Income Research at the University of Pennsylvania and Des Moines University's public health team is leading research on the results. Currently, the cities of Des Moines, Urbandale, and Windsor Heights, and Polk County are partially funding the program. In collaboration with private partners including Wells Fargo, Principal, and Mid-Iowa Health Foundations, and groups like the United Way of Central Iowa. Under the new law, Uplift will no longer be able to receive funding through the cities and counties the program is currently working with beginning January 1, 2025. The program, launched in May 2023, is set to conclude in May 2025. Meaning there will be at least 5 months when Uplift plans to receive local government funding that will no longer be available. However, Ashley Ezio and Michael Berger, project coordinators with Uplift, said in a statement that the team behind the program plans to continue the project and publish results on the original schedule. Quote, "With an 11-member funder team, the investment in Uplift is diverse," Ezio and Berger said in a statement. "Due to multiple funding streams, the pilot will continue under its full design of 24 months of payments and the sharing of final research findings in the summer of 2026. Uplift's project coordination team and research teams will publish and share these findings widely with the Central Iowa community to inform policy and resource discussions regarding potential solutions to address the growing needs of low-income working families in our communities." While the Uplift program is continuing on its original schedule, supporters of the program have decried the new law for preventing local governments from researching and investing in different ways to address issues like poverty in their own communities. Matthew Reed, executive director of the Harkin Institute, called the new law a mistake. Quote, "We supported Uplift, the Central Basic Iowa Income Pilot, to find out if a basic income program would work in Iowa," Reed said in a statement after the law was signed. "To judge the program before seeing results from the research study is a mistake." During debate on the Hill, Democrats argued the measure overrides local control. Senator Janice Wiener, Democrat, Iowa City, said local governments should have the authority to test methods like guaranteed income programs, especially as no state funding is being used by local governments to finance initiatives like Uplift. Quote, "This is the province of local government to experiment, to see what works, to run pilot programs," Wiener said. "If it doesn't work, if people don't like them, they won't be elected the next time. It's the place for these sorts of experiments." However, Republicans argued that guaranteed income programs have been researched and tested elsewhere in both America and abroad, and said results have shown government incomes do not help alleviate poverty. In the House, floor manager Representative Stephen Holt, Republican Denison, cited studies that suggest guaranteed income programs effectively subsidize employers paying low wages and offering inconsistent work, as well as citing research on guaranteed income from the 1960s and 1970s, finding that people who receive such benefits work fewer hours than people who do not. Holt has also called guaranteed income programs, quote, "socialism on steroids," end quote, and an, quote, "attack on American values," end quote. He said problems with these benefit programs mean state action was necessary. Quote, "In this case, the importance of protecting our work ethic and preventing an increase in government dependence trumps the local control argument," Holt said. "Just as we do not allow cities and counties to have differing laws on murder, we're not going to allow cities and counties to murder our work ethic." Ag and environment. Bird flu virus is abundant in the milk of sick cows. Testing of non-lactating cattle is far less effective, officials say. By Jared Strong, May 2, 2024. Dairy cattle infected by avian influenza in recent months have surprisingly large amounts of the virus in their milk, but little in other bodily fluids, according to tests by the Iowa State University Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory. That makes it easy to confirm whether a lactating cow is infected, but makes testing more difficult for other cattle as federal agriculture officials attempt to learn the extent of bovine infections across the nation. In nasal secretions, blood, feces, and urine, quote, "we can find an occasional positive, but those positives are at levels that are almost undetectable," said Dr. Drew Magstadt, a cattle disease researcher at the Ames Lab. His comments were part of an online ISU Extension and Outreach discussion about the virus on Wednesday. Magstadt discovered about 6 weeks ago that highly pathogenic avian influenza was the source of a mystery illness among dairy cattle in Texas. It had never been known to infect cattle in the United States before. Since then, the virus has been detected in herds in 8 other states, most recently in Colorado. That spread has been caused by the movement of dairy cows from affected herds to previously unaffected herds. Genetic testing revealed that wild birds initially infected cattle with the virus, but the USDA has found evidence that it has since spread from cow to cow and from cattle to poultry. At least one infected dairy cow had no symptoms of illness. FDA, virus fragments in milk supply. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced last week that fragments of the virus have been detected in the nation's commercial milk supply, even though milk from 6 cows is barred from distribution. On Wednesday, it said testing has confirmed that pasteurization, a process of heating milk to kill pathogens, inactivates the virus. Tests of milk, cottage cheese, and sour cream, quote, "did not detect any live infectious virus," the FDA said. FDA strongly warned against drinking raw milk, but some states, including Iowa, have sought in recent years to expand the unpasteurized milk's availability for purchase. Also on Wednesday, the USDA said tests of ground beef in states where the virus has been detected showed no evidence of the virus. Dairy cattle are often slaughtered for their meat when their milk production drops. Iowa is not imposing quarantine on sick cows. Starting this week, the department requires most lactating dairy cattle to test negative for the virus before they can be transported to different states. Iowa will require labs to report all confirmations of the virus, regardless of the animal species, said Dr. Jeff Kaizand, the state veterinarian and a bureau chief for the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. "For now, IDOLs will not quarantine dairy farms if their cattle are infected," Kaizand said. Most states have taken a similar approach, he said. Dr. Yuko Sato, an ISU professor who has researched the virus in poultry, said dairy farmers should take more precautions than what might be required by government officials. She said a bird flu outbreak in 2015 was largely driven by farm-to-farm spread that was the result of insufficient biosecurity measures. About 33 million poultry were culled in Iowa that year. Quote, "We waited for the federal government to give us guidance, so we kind of sat on our hands a little bit," she said. "I encourage the dairy industry to take a proactive stance and try to look at creative solutions because we're learning as we speak." Highly pathogenic avian influenza is often lethal to poultry, especially chickens, but infected cows usually recover in 10 to 14 days. Ag and Environment, Capital Clicks. Less than half of Iowa is suffering from drought. By Jared Strong, May 2, 2024. Drought conditions in the state continue to retreat amid abundant rainfall, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. A Thursday report shows the biggest moisture gains in western and southern Iowa. Less than half of the state now has drought for the first time since June 2023. That's down from about 96% of the state in October. Last week's statewide precipitation averaged 1.32 inches, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's about 45% more than is normally expected. The highest reported rainfall was 4.72 inches in Little Sioux in far western Iowa, whereas the least was 1/10 of an inch near Gutenberg in far northeast Iowa. A wide area of severe drought remains in eastern Iowa, although it has been shrinking. Much of that area had previously suffered from extreme drought, the second-to-worst classification issued by the Drought Monitor, but its presence has greatly diminished. About 2% of the state has extreme drought, down from 35% at the start of the year. Drought conditions might lift from about a quarter of the state in the coming months, according to a recent report by the U.S. Climate Prediction Center. Drought is expected to remain, but improve in the worst affected areas. A USDA report on Monday said about 78% of cropland has adequate or surplus soil moisture, which is slightly better than a year ago. Crop planting has been several days ahead of the five-year average. As of Sunday, about 39% of corn and 25% of soybeans had been planted. Government and politics, Capital Clicks. Governors oppose National Guard move to Space Force, by Robin Opsahl, April 29, 2024. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed on to a letter Monday alongside 47 other state governors, as well as five territories and commonwealths, opposing the Biden's administration move to incorporate Air National Guard service members into the Space Force. The letter from the National Governors Association, addressed to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, is written in opposition to a legislative proposal submitted by the Department of Defense to the Senate Armed Services Committee that would transfer some Air National Guard personnel and equipment currently being used on space missions to the Space Force. The Defense Department proposal would require Congress to override existing law requiring that governors approve changes to National Guard units through Title 10 and 32 of the U.S. Code that outlines gubernatorial authority over their state's National Guard. The bipartisan group of governors signing the letter said the proposed measures would hurt governors' abilities to use the National Guard in response to crises. Governors must retain full authority over these units, quote, to protect operational readiness and America's communities, the letter states. Quote, legislation that sidesteps, eliminates, or otherwise reduces governors' authority within their states and territories undermines longstanding partnerships, precedents, military readiness, and operational efficacy, the letter states. This action also negatively affects the important relationships between governors and DoD at a time when we need to have full trust and confidence between the two to meet the growing threats posed by the era of strategic competition as well as natural disasters, end quote. Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall told federal lawmakers earlier in April that the proposal would shift roughly 700 National Guard members to Space Force as part of a one-time transfer. There are currently 14 units with about 1,000 personnel working on space-related missions in seven states: Alaska, California, Colorado, Florida, Hawaii, New York, and Ohio, that could be impacted by the move, according to the National Guard Association of the United States. The National Guard advocacy groups also released a statement opposing the draft legislation. Kendall told reporters in April that he doesn't, quote, see a reason why a state needs a Space Force militia, end quote. But retired Major General Frank M. McGinn, the organization's president, said keeping space missions within the National Guard keeps the personnel current serving on space missions in work, as many are not able to move or take on full-time responsibilities. It allows states to retain the same defense and military capabilities as other parts of the country, he said. Comparing the issue to states having artillery and cyber units in the National Guard separate from the U.S. military, quote, here is what Secretary Kendall is asking to do, skirt federal law to transfer nearly empty units to the Space Force, thereby reducing the nation's military space capabilities at a time when our nation is seeing growing competition in space, McGinn said. I don't see why he wants to take this action, and a growing number in Congress wonder the same. Only two state governors, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Texas Governor Greg Abbott, did not sign on to the letter. Both states have a vested interest in Space Force operations and development, with Patrick Space Force Base in Brevard County, Florida, being one of the five current bases of the military branch. National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, also has operations in both states. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for May 3rd, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gager. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.